What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 97. We're continuing our series on various supplements. So today we're going to be focusing on supplements for longevity. So stuff you can take as you get older to try and stay as young as possible for as long as possible. You know, that's a big deal out there. Everybody wants to stay young. You know, youth is something you don't appreciate till it's gone. So there are a few things you can take that can help you, you know, feel better as you get older. So we're going to break down that. But this week, since we're not doing kind of like what's new anymore, we're going to talk about an article that I found this week that I found very interesting. It's called Do Dietary Lectins Cause Disease? And I'm going to link that on the website so you can find it at tntwellnessandnutrition.com. You can read it. It's like 2 pages, so it's a real quick read, but it's very interesting. So, Tom, I guess do you want to kind of start just what you thought about the article?
Well, spoiler alert, the answer to that question is yes, they do.
For sure, yeah.
So the following diseases have been linked to lectins. So like diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, celiac disease, nephropathy. It's basically just pre-chronic kidney disease.
Yeah.
What you get before your kidneys like start failing on you, this is like the precursor to that. And peptic ulcers. So a wide variety of diseases affecting a wide variety of organs. But one thing they do have in common is that they're all autoimmune diseases.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, it just reinforces stuff. We've talked about lectins in the past, so we've talked about lectins on the Donut podcast, so I think it's called, like, What Are Donuts Bad? Something like that. I think it's, like, episode 40-something, so you can check that out. And we also talked about just lectins and autoimmune issues for the Keto for Autoimmunity podcast, and that was just a few weeks ago. That's pretty recent, so you can listen to that if you want, like, a deep dive, but... And just a like overview, lectins are just, they're kind of a class of proteins. And you find them in animal foods and plant foods. But the form in plant foods are what actually affect us. The form in animal foods doesn't affect us at all. And so lectins can, they can pretty much tear up our gut and lead to something called leaky gut, where food particles we eat actually get into our blood supply and cause a problem. And in this case, lead to autoimmune issues where your body, your immune system, literally attacks its own cells. You know, like Tom said, leading to things like diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, stuff like that. So there's just no doubt that lectins are bad. They're in tomatoes, they're in peanuts, they're in all nuts, actually. So it's just, if you want to find out what to avoid as far as lectins go, listen to those 2 podcasts I mentioned previously and or read this article, you know.
You know, one thing I found really interesting is they were talking about, at the end of that article, about tomatoes and how they're being genetically engineered. And they're just kind of suggesting that there might be a large increase in tomato allergies in the near future. And that got me thinking to, like, peanuts, because I know peanuts have a ton of lectins in it. And it seems like peanut allergies are on the rise, and the severity of the peanut allergies are on the rise as well. So I'm just wondering if that has something to do with the lectins or something to do with the genetic engineering with the peanuts. I'm not really sure, but I was just connecting those dots. It seemed like so many more people are allergic to things high in lectins or having severe allergic reactions to these things that were never a thing when we were kids. Like, I didn't remember anybody with peanut allergies. I didn't know anybody that can't eat wheat. But, like, today, like, you know, 25 years later, I mean, these things are fairly common now.
Oh, yeah, fairly common. Yeah, and like you told me, I didn't know this, but some schools ban peanut butter, like elementary schools, because the allergic reaction is so severe, it can kill you. Like, none of that ever happened when I was in school. Like, I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad. I don't know if that's, like, overreacted parents or if that peanuts are that bad. I mean, most likely it's going to be somewhere in the middle in a combination of the two.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, so that's an article we read this week. Very interesting. Check it out on the website. But
yeah, you can also find it on our Facebook page. I posted it there this morning.
Cool. Yeah, on Facebook too. And so yeah, let's just get into the podcast this week. And like I said, we're going over various supplements, and it's sad, but people love supplements, because if I tell somebody to go, you know, run 10 miles or take this pill, they'll take this pill every time. You know what I'm saying? It's just supplements are an easy way out, so that's kind of a shame, don't you think?
Yeah, it is. People are always looking for shortcuts. So if you are eating like a really great organized diet, an animal-based diet, you're combining a bunch of, you know, muscle meats with organ meats with like bones and connective tissue as well, you're going to have all your bases covered if you're following that nose-to-tail like carnivore diet like what we recommend. But if you're not, if there are some holes in your game, or if you're recovering from like some sort of like severe chronic illness, these are where like you need supplements. If you're either not eating an appropriate diet, or if you have a lot of damage and you need extra healing. So
exactly. And honestly, in today's world, we're all healing from something, don't you think?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, most people come to this way of eating because they realize how many chinks in their armor that they have. Like, okay, I need to fix this, I need to fix this, I need to fix this.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the biggest killer out there, just talk about old age, it's going to be heart disease. And pretty much everybody, as you get older, knows someone in their family, their parents, their brothers, uncles, aunts, whatever, has heart disease, congestive heart failure, has had a heart attack, something like that. And so a lot of these supplements are going to go into kind of heart health and focusing on that, because that is the biggest killer out there. And just the gist of this podcast, as we get older, our body just literally becomes less efficient. There's no way about it, and it's obvious if you look in a mirror, right? So our body will produce less hormones, things like testosterone, things like growth hormone. You're just going to produce less of it, and then you experience the effects of that down the road. So these supplements are kind of based around the fact that they can either replace the hormones that your body used to produce, or at least the things the hormones would create, or they're precursors of things that our body needs. So this is how you can kind of get around the aging effects by using supplements. And the first one I want to go over is a sugar called D-ribose. And I know a lot of people are going to think sugar, like, wow, like, how can you recommend sugar? You're like a Mr. Low Carb guy. You think keto diet's the best diet, which it is. But this sugar is different. So it's a 5-carbon sugar our body naturally produces itself through something called the pentose phosphate pathway. And it uses glucose as a starting molecule. It contributes to something called the purine pool. So all ATP, which is just an energy molecule of our body, it's what our body uses for fuel, and all DNA and RNA have a purine base. So they have the purine base, and everything else is added onto it that makes them unique molecules. And this sugar isn't like other sugars in our bodies. So it doesn't raise insulin. It doesn't cause a blood sugar spike, nothing like that. Like, our body does not recognize this as a fuel source at all. And we never actually intake enough from a dietary standpoint to cause any sort of metabolic response. So our body knows that this is only a structural sugar. It's not something that our body wants to use for fuel. And normally our body does produce enough of it. But during times of injury, like ischemia, which is like low blood oxygen to some area of the heart, or chronic low energy, like someone with heart failure or congestive heart failure, our purine pool, and again, remember, this sugar D-ribose is what makes up purines, becomes diminished. And this is problematic for the heart, which is a very metabolically demanding organ. I mean, just think, it's beating 24/7, 365 our entire life. It needs a constant supply of energy. And all energy, again, is a purine. So to compensate for this, like inadequate ATP production, an injured body, our body has developed a way to make ATP in a pinch. So to produce ATP in times of emergency, the body can combine 2 ADB molecules into 1 ATP molecule and 1 AMP molecule. And I hate kind of using these abbreviations because it all starts to sound the same eventually. But ATP is like adenosine triphosphate, so there's 3 phosphate groups. And that gets broken down to ADP, which is adenosine diphosphate. And then AMP is adenosine monophosphate. So the AMP, DP, TP ending is just recognizing the amount of phosphate groups on this molecule. Hopefully that helps people understand it. But honestly, turning things to ADP into ATP and AMP is not good for the body. Like, normally, the body would prefer to recycle ADP back to ATP all the time, because when you do that, your body doesn't use a purine base. But when our body creates AMP, which it does, like I said, in a low energy standpoint, some with heart failure, some with ischemia, who have like some blockage in their heart, when they're doing this little trick to kind of make ATP, that AMP that's kind of a byproduct gets wasted by the body. The body actually converts that to uric acid and then just dumps it. So it loses that purine base. And so over time, that can really replenish the purine pool. And someone with heart disease, like, is never technically in a recovery state. Like, their body is compromised, their heart is compromised, always working hard just to make enough energy to survive. And so that kind of directs the glucose in their blood to the heart, because the heart needs energy. It's like, yo, give me this energy, give me this energy. And glucose is a very fast energy. So it kind of directs the glucose to that rather than to the pentose phosphate pathway to create D-ribose. So it's a two-way street in how a bad heart can really hurt your D-ribose pool. That all makes sense?
Yes, it does. And one thing to kind of add on to that is your heart doesn't want to use glucose. Your heart wants to use fatty acids. That's its primary fuel source. So it using glucose is under times of stress and like, not like slight stress, like severe stress. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a last resort to use glucose. It's always trying to use fatty acids for its fuel source.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's a good point. So we are talking about people in compromised positions for sure. And so this is that the vicious cycle that the heart has to do to survive that leads to heart failure. It leads to people literally dropping dead when their D-ribose pool runs out and their purine pool runs out. ATP stops working and you're done. And actually, I didn't talk about it in this podcast because it doesn't really relate, but it's like you've seen athletes, like people literally in their prime, just completely drop dead. A lot of times their heart stops, and a lot of times because a purine pool run out. Like, they worked out so much, their body never replenished their D-ribose pool. And so it happens. It happens to everybody. And, well, fuck, not everybody. But it can happen to anybody. That's what I meant to say. But, yeah, supplementing with D-ribose is kind of going to be the best way, especially for these people in a compromised position, because we just don't get a lot of it from our diet. We don't. And in your compromised position, your body's not going to make enough of it. So you can buy it online. It's real cheap. You can find it on Amazon. It's just a white powder, just like any other sugar, really. And I've tasted it before. It tastes kind of sweet. It's a good additive to a protein shake because it adds flavor without actually having to kind of contribute insulin, contribute to a blood sugar spike, anything like that. So it's kind of a natural sweetener in that sense. And doses of 3 to 5 grams are adequate. That's kind of the standard dose. So doing that, supplementing the D-ribose 3 to 5 grams a day is a good way to kind of always make sure your purine pool, and then remember that's ATP, that's all the DNA in our body, that's all the RNA in our body, which is our genetic code. That's what makes us human, makes us us. All that gets topped up, all that's adequately supplied. So 3 to 5 grams a day, pretty straightforward.
Yeah, and one other like bad part about this is people with heart disease are directed away from eating the foods that are actually going to have the most D-ribose in it. So D-ribose is going to be found in meat, especially ones that have a lot of mitochondria. So things like muscle meat, red meat, like things like beef heart, that's going to be like your best sources of D-ribose. And unfortunately, most doctors are going to tell you to stay away from those foods. So you're going to be even more likely to be deficient in it. Leading to supplementation being even more necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'll tell you to eat heart-healthy grains and just watch what happens, you know?
Yeah. It's a vicious cycle.
It is. Okay, so the next supplement I recommend is called CoQ10. And we have a whole podcast on CoQ10, so you can listen to that. It's a long time ago, but if you want a deep dive, check it out. But just to give you the kind of cliff notes of what CoQ10 is, it's a critical component of the electron transport chain. And it acts like an electron carrier, and by shuttling electrons from complex 1 and 2 to complex 3. And it also acts as antioxidant in the mitochondria. And so the electron transport chain, that's in every mitochondria in our body, and it's how our body produces ATP. So it's that's just top level. If you want to learn more, like I said, go listen to the old podcast. But it acting like an antioxidant in the mitochondria is a big deal, because the electron transport chain is the main source of endogenous free radicals in our body. So our body creates a ton of free radicals, which everybody knows is our bad thing. That's what antioxidants go and fight against. So free radicals just damage cells locally, wherever they are, they damage the cells. And our body produces a ton of them in the mitochondria. So, and that's because oxygen's present there. A lot of energy is present there. It's honestly a cocktail to make free radicals. So these CoQ10 molecules that are in the membrane, as well as in the electron transport chain, act to kind of control all the free radicals happening in the mitochondria. So it's very important for mitochondrial health. We keep our mitochondria healthy, we stay healthy. So it's great to keep our mitochondria as healthy as possible for as long as possible. And as we get older, our body will produce less and less CoQ10, and it starts very early in life. Like, most people don't think they're old when they're 30, but when you're 30, your body's already producing less CoQ10. So you can honestly start supplementing with this very early if you wanted to. It's not something you have to wait till like you're 60 or 70 to take. And the best form to take is ubiquinol, so the OL ending. And this is the reduced form. And you want to find something that's water soluble. Look in the label. It should say probably like front and center if it's ubiquinol and water soluble. So that's the supplement to take. Dosages of up to 3 grams have been shown to be safe and effective, but usually for heart health, the dose of 300 to 600 milligrams is standard. And the problem with the supplement, I think, is that it's just expensive. It really is an expensive supplement. If you're like fortunate to have a Costco card, Costco usually has a really good form. It's ubiquinol and it's what do you call it, water soluble. So it's the right form to get, but it's still pretty expensive. So in that case, you know, recommending the 300 to 500 milligrams a day is like a good dose because it's just cost effective. If you're kind of balling and you don't care, if you want to take a gram a day, go ahead. You want to take 2 grams a day, go ahead. But this is going to turn like a crack habit. You know, it's going to be real expensive, but you honestly can't overdose on CoQ10, so you're going to be fine. And so, yeah, that's the second supplement we recommend. Did you want to add something to that?
Yeah, so since we were just talking about CoQ10 and how vital it is in producing energy, this is so important for your heart. Your heart is constantly producing energy, so you need so much CoQ10. And again, just like with D-ribose, the best sources are going to be your red meat, especially things like beef heart is going to be the best source, things that you're told not to eat. And what even makes it worse is most people that do have some sort of heart disease are taking a statin drug. What do statin drugs do? They inhibit your body from creating its own CoQ10, leading to your heart getting worse instead of better.
Oh yeah, that is like the most sinister shit on the planet. And when you know that, it blows your mind. Like, how can something that hurts your heart be prescribed to me to make me better?
Yeah, and unless you're told to take extra CoQ10, you're not going to know about it. And hopefully your body can adapt to it, but probably not, because why would it? You're already compromised.
Yeah, you're already most likely in your 60s. You've already followed the standard American diet for the rest of your life, or your entire life. Your body's not prepared to make that change.
Yeah, and if you are making dietary changes, I'm sure you're probably not taking more CoQ10. That's probably not the way you're going.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next supplement I wanted to talk about was creatine. And I feel like I've talked about creatine for like the last 5 episodes, but it really is that good of a supplement. It's not just for your muscles. It really is part of any high energy system in our body. Like, it relies on creatine, like our stomach producing ATP, or not ATP, sorry, our stomach producing stomach acid. That requires a ton of ATP, and then creatine as well. And then our brain, we talked about our heart being so metabolically demanding. Well, guess what's more metabolically demanding? Our brain. Like, nothing tops it. Our brain is so thirsty. It needs all the energy it can get, and therefore it relies heavily on creatine. There's a lot of creatine in our brain. So, like, both of these organs and these systems can become compromised as we age. We all know that. Alzheimer's, heart disease, very common. So our body just won't produce enough creatine. It just diminishes. Like I said at the intro, the body just doesn't work as efficiently as we age. So, like, if our body doesn't produce enough stomach acid, it won't allow us to properly absorb our nutrients, which is a big deal. And then if our brain starts to go, you get things like Alzheimer's disease and all that type of stuff. So creatine is real important for this. It can help easily. It's very cheap. It's very effective. It's very safe. So supplementing with creatine monohydrate, 5 grams a day, taken with water. You can take it any time of the day, empty stomach, full stomach, it doesn't matter, is the way to go. 5 grams creatine monohydrate. Everybody should take it. It's not just for bodybuilders.
Yeah, and so it's found in meat. pretty much like all these supplements that we're going to be talking about. But one interesting thing about creatine and saying how important it is for your brain health, when vegans supplement with creatine, not only do they improve their memory, but they also improve their IQ scores. So that just shows you how damaging low creatine levels can be for your brain.
Yeah, that, and he says he uses the vegan population because you're not going to find any creatine in any sort of plant source. It's only animal-based. So, yeah, no, that's like clear evidence that how creatine affects our brains. People don't think about it, but it does.
And it also goes to show you that not all proteins are created equal. A protein is made up of amino acids, and if you're not getting all those amino acids, then you're not going to be able to create creatine or other nutrients like that.
Yep.
So that just kind of shows you, hey, protein is not protein.
Yeah, the source matters, the quality matters for sure. No, that's a great point. Okay, so the next supplement I recommend, which I feel like, again, I've talked about forever, is magnesium. And yes, we have a whole podcast on magnesium. If you want to listen to that, check it out. It's one of the very early ones. But
we got two on it. It's a two-parter, and I feel like it comes up in damn near every podcast.
Yeah, because magnesium is so important. It's a vital mineral that is present in over 600 chemical reactions, the cofactor, meaning it has to be present for these reactions to occur. It's very important. It's part of 6 of the 8 steps of the TCA cycle, which, again, we talk about ATP so much in this podcast. That's how our body produces energy. Magnesium is involved in damn near every step. Every ATP in our body, every active form of ATP is bound to magnesium. Our body has to bind magnesium ATP to make it even usable. That's how important magnesium is. And everyone is deficient in it. That's because our soil has gone to shit. There's not a lot of magnesium in our soil anymore. And Tom mentioned Roundup earlier, things being sprayed with glyphosate, like all our vegetables and fruits. That actually binds to magnesium in our soil and makes it inaccessible to the plant. So it's kind of a double dip on why Roundup sucks. And then the big source of, like, in our evolution of magnesium was really the ocean with water. Things like hard water, because that has, like, mineral content in it. Nowadays, our water does not. Our water's been literally softened, and that takes the magnesium out of it. And who's in the ocean for, you know, days on end? Pretty much nobody, you know? So we have to supplement with magnesium to really get adequate amounts. The form to take, in my opinion, is magnesium glycinate. That's a form I've always taken. I would recommend people start with 200 or 400 milligrams at night before bed. And then as you go, you can increase the dose and see where your ceiling is. Mine, I take around a gram a day, and I'm perfectly fine. So that's my recommendation for magnesium.
Yeah, I got nothing to add to that. I feel like we've beaten the magnesium horse to death by now. Like, if you've been following us, you know how important magnesium is.
Yeah. Okay, so the next supplement, again, I feel like I've talked about forever, but it's true. It's not just for gym bros. It's not just for people trying to gain weight. It's a protein powder. And that this whole thing revolves around keeping muscle as you age. It's so hard. For whatever reason, every old person I know eats like a bird. I don't know why. Like, I see my mom, she just turned 70, and she eats like a bird. And I know my mom listens to this. I hope she didn't. And I know she doesn't eat enough protein. But it's just, I don't know, it's just hard, I guess, when you get older to eat enough food. Lord knows, hopefully I'm not like that. I doubt I will be. But, and as we get older, our muscles get more resistant to the anabolic properties of protein. So, of specifically the amino acid L-leucine, that's the amino acid that's going to trigger muscle protein synthesis. That's the amino acid that's going to trigger our body to build muscle. That's very important. So, for someone like me, someone like Tom, we get 3 grams, honestly, probably like 2.7, 2.8 grams of leucine. Our body is going to stimulate muscle protein synthesis and recruit amino acids to our muscles, which is exactly where you want your amino acids to go. But as we get older, that 3-gram marker goes up. 3.5, 4, 4.5. So that means this older person has to eat more protein to hit that L-leucine marker. And what do old people do, like I just said earlier? They eat less. So none of that amino acids are being directed towards their muscles in general. And that's a bad thing. So just think, if you can get one protein shake a day, let's say it's 50 grams, that's going to be, geez, almost 6 grams of leucine. No one is that resistant to leucine's anabolic effect. So 6 grams will trigger muscle protein synthesis for sure in anybody. I don't care if you're 100 years old. So that's why I recommend a protein powder, because it's just easy to drink 50 grams of protein. It'd be real hard for an older individual to eat 50 grams of protein, don't you think?
Yeah, it's a great way to just get extra without without any problems. And it's also a good thing you can just have if you need like a meal replacement, you need something healthy on the go, like a protein shake is like one of your best options.
Yeah, exactly.
And a couple other things, like protein isn't just for muscles. I know like if you go to a GNC or a store like that, that's all they're going to tell you is how good it is for muscles. But honestly, like protein affects so many other processes in our body. Like it's there for energy production, think creatine, antioxidants, stuff like glutathione, so your immune system. Your bones are mostly made out of protein too. So bone health, immune system, energy, like, hey, protein does so much more than just build strong muscles.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's that stigma, though, is what keeps people from supplementing with protein powders. Like someone like my mom or someone like your mom, you know?
Yeah, I know. People think you take some protein shakes, you're going to get big like Arnold. I wish that was the case.
Shit,
I'd be
me too.
Like 200 pounds of muscle heavier if that
yes.
was the case.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, that's not.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not. Yeah. Do you want to go over the next one?
Yeah, so the next one is L-carnitine. Again, this is another one. Actually, same with protein. These are found abundantly in meat
sources.
Oh,
hold on. I'm sorry. I never actually recommended what form to take of the protein powder. I feel like if you listen to this podcast, you already know the answer to this, but the animal-based protein is what you want to get. You want to get a whey protein. You can do a concentrate. You can do it isolate. It's up to you. I personally always go with concentrate because it's cheaper, and in my opinion, the vast majority of people are not going to see any benefit going to an isolate, but, you know, that's up to you. So a whey protein shake is the way to go. If you're allergic to dairy, then go with an egg protein shake or even a beef protein shake, but any way you can, stay in the animal kingdom. Don't go for a plant-based protein. There's a million reasons why. You shouldn't, so you should check. You can check out our protein powder podcast to learn those reasons why, because we go over that. But do that. Get at least 30 grams. If you're a little bit older, try and get 40 grams. Try and get 50 grams in this shake. Your body, your mind, your muscles, everything will appreciate it if you do.
Okay, so now the next one is L-carnitine. So this one is not an essential amino acid, so your body can make it if all the other factors are there. So what L-carnitine does is it shuttles fatty acids into cells for energy. So it's mainly found in muscle, and this is especially important for your heart. Your heart is a muscle. So your heart cannot run out of L-carnitine. Like, that is the absolute worst case scenario. So you want to have plenty of L-carnitine so your body can keep using fatty acids for fuel, and it'll have plenty of energy all day long. That's what you want. So foods rich in L-carnitine are muscle, meat, and heart. Isn't that kind of funny? It's mostly used in our muscles and our heart, and those are the best food sources for it.
Yep. Makes sense.
Yeah, nutrition is so difficult sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you aren't getting enough, or if you are recovering from heart disease, then you might want to supplement with it. So L-carnitine, this is the name of the supplement, or acetyl L-carnitine. And acetyl L-carnitine actually is showing some good results for brain health, too. So if you are suffering from some brain fog, or you just notice that you're not as sharp as you used to be, you might want to supplement with acetyl L-carnitine. It's a little bit more expensive, but either one is perfectly fine.
Yeah, that's a good advice. And it's just, I really think something like L-carnitine, if everybody, like if me and you followed a carnivore diet our entire lives, we would never be deficient in L-carnitine. Like nobody should be, but the way this world is, I bet the vast majority of people are, you know?
Yeah, and again, it's something else. Like, if you get heart disease, what are you told to do? Cut back on red meat or meat in general. So now you're just cutting off another essential nutrient that your heart needs. Like, you're just cutting your heart short of so many vital nutrients. The messaging is so backwards for heart health.
Yes.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and people wonder why it's the number one killer, right? It hasn't got any better.
It hasn't gotten any better. I don't know if we know more about it, but we've studied it a lot more. We've created so many drugs. There's been so much money thrown at it, and we're not getting any positive results. So you think we would try something different, but we're not.
No. Mm-mm.
That's what we're trying to accomplish with this podcast. Get that information out there, get the truth out there, and improve people's lives.
Yep, that's it, man.
All right, so the next one is glycine. So this is another amino acid. Again, your body it's not an essential amino acid, so your body can't create enough of it. But again, it's only going to create it if there's enough other amino acids and all the circumstances are right. So you might need to be supplementing with glycine. So this one's really important. It's a building block for glutathione. That's your body's master antioxidant. Creatine, and for creating collagen. So collagen is what makes up your bones, your your ligaments, your tendons, your skin, your hair, nails, collagen is great. So our ancestors didn't really need to deal with glycine too much because they ate the entire animal. They were eating the bones. They were either making bone broth or just chowing down on the bones themselves. They were eating the tendons, the ligaments, the cartilage. They were eating everything. So they were getting plenty of glycine in their diet. Nowadays, if you're going to go eat some animal, you're most likely just buying a steak and just eating the steak, or you're buying some heart. So you're not really getting a lot of glycine from those foods. So you can either start eating a lot more foods rich in glycine, things like chicken, because then you'll get the skin with it. But chicken has a lot of problems on its own. So your best bets for getting glycine is either going to be gelatin tablets, a collagen supplement, which unfortunately they're crazy expensive right now because collagen is like it's like super trendy. It's the most popular supplement out there. You're looking at spending like $30 to $40 for something that's not even going to last you a month. Or for me, what I do is I make bone broth because not only am I getting a lot of glycine and collagen from the bone broth, I'm able to add a lot of other things to it to make it kind of like a super supplement.
Yeah, if only people were more comfortable making bone broth. Like, bone broth checks so many boxes for supplements, but I don't know, people just don't know where to get bones. People don't feel comfortable with bones. Like you said, nowadays, everyone just uses a steak, they eat it, they're done, you know?
Yeah, you can buy bone broth too, depending on where you go. Walmart has one that's really cheap and affordable. A lot of like health food stores, they sell them and they're like $10 for a tiny little bottle that's going to give you like one or two servings. So, I mean, it's kind of up to you. That's why I make my own. Most grocery stores, you can find them. They're either going to be marrow bones. You can save your bones from like ribs and steaks and stuff like that. Or you can maybe find your local butcher. He probably has a lot of bones lying around that he doesn't know what to do with. So there are some options to get some cheap bones.
Yeah, that's true.
And I know we have a whole podcast on bone broth, and I think we talk about how to make it in there.
We did.
Just add water, add salt, and add some sort of vinegar, some sort of acid to it. It helps extract more minerals from the bones. And let that simmer for at least a day. I normally let it go for like 2 days. So yeah, it's pretty easy to make.
Yeah, don't be intimidated by it. You can do it.
Yeah. All right, so the next one is vitamin K. And specifically, it's vitamin K2, not K1. K1 is poorly converted, if it's converted at all. Again, like if your body has to make stuff, it has to have the right situation. So there can't be any like factors that are missing, because then it won't be made. So K1, it's mostly found in plants, so like leafy greens. So if your doctor's telling you, hey, you need some vitamin K, don't go for the leafy greens because you're not going to get the vitamin K2 from it. K1 needs to be converted to K2. So why not just consume K2? It makes so much more sense. You don't have to worry about converting it. And maybe you might not even be converting K1 at all to K2. The studies are kind of all over the place, and that's just going to depend on your individual circumstances. So what vitamin K2 does is it makes calcium get deposited in the right places. Where you want your calcium to be is your bones and your muscles, and you don't want calcium to be in your arteries. So vitamin K2 is vital for that. And again, if you have a lot of calcium buildup in your heart arteries, that's chronic heart disease. You're having issues with your heart. This whole podcast is almost centered around your heart because that's one of the most likely places to fail. So if food sources that are high in vitamin K2, liver, egg yolks, butter. So this one I just found out. So dark meat, from like poultry, stuff like chicken and turkey and pork, those are generally going to be higher in vitamin K than beef sources, but that's not necessarily a good thing. The reason that they're higher than beef sources is that those animals are fed K3, which is a synthetic form of vitamin K2. And then they're converting that to, or that's a, sorry. K3 is a synthetic form of vitamin K, and then those animals are converting it to K2. So it's kind of a new thing. It's extremely unnatural. So I have a hard time believing that's a good thing. And most of the time, beef is such a better source than for most other nutrients than pork or chicken that I would still go with beef for it, especially butter, other sorts of dairy products, that's one of the few times that it does make a difference if you are going to eat grass-fed. Grass-fed dairy is higher in vitamin K than, like, just the grain-finished dairy.
Yeah.
And you can also supplement with vitamin K2. You can just go to your local store, buy a vitamin K2 supplement. You can also combine it with vitamin D for even better results. But I'm going to get into vitamin D in the next part, why you shouldn't really rely on a supplement for your vitamin D.
Yeah. No, I really have nothing to say about vitamin K. It's kind of an obscure vitamin, to be honest. It's not widely known about, you know, so it's good to get the calcium, like Tom said, where it needs to be. Get it from the food if you can. If not, supplement with it. That's about it. The big one that's coming up, that's vitamin D. That's super relevant for today's just climate, you know?
Yeah, so vitamin D, everybody knows it's good for your bones. Not a lot of people know that it's very vital for your immune system, especially in today's world. So there is a very, very strong correlation between low vitamin D levels and severe outcomes from COVID-19 patients. So most of the people that are in the ICUs, it's like pretty much over 90% are like extremely low in vitamin D. And you can also look at countries. The countries that have sufficient vitamin D have pretty much no problems with COVID. And the ones that are low in vitamin D are the ones like the United States that are having these crazy outbreaks and the hospitals are getting overrun. So the sun is going to be the best source for vitamin D. And you need exposed skin. That means no long sleeves, not a ton of sunscreen on, and you need your eyes to be exposed too. Now, I know that sounds kind of weird, but if you have sunglasses on, your body's not fully interpreting that the sun's out. So you're not going to get all that full conversion. So you want no sunglasses and exposed skin. People with darker skin need more time in the sun. That's one of the adaptations with that darker skin is they have more time in the sun than white people. So they need more time in the sun to get that sunlight and convert it to vitamin D. Another problem, which we talked about earlier with cholesterol, how important cholesterol is. Actually, we did not talk about cholesterol. So cholesterol is needed to turn sunlight into vitamin D. We talked about statins earlier, which lowers cholesterol. That's another thing with this COVID thing. A lot of people that are having a lot of serious outcomes are on cholesterol-lowering medication. And if you're on that cholesterol-lowering medication, you're not going to be getting adequate vitamin D levels because your body just can't convert that sunlight into vitamin D. So you might be needing to eat more cholesterol from your diet. Eggs are going to be the best source of cholesterol. Brains is another good source, but I don't know how many people are really going to be like able to eat brains just from if they can stomach it, because that sounds kind of gross. I don't know if I could eat brains.
Me either.
And then also, I don't know if I could even find brains. So go with the egg yolks.
Yeah, go with the egg yolks for sure.
The only time I think supplements should be used is if you don't have access to the sun. So if you live somewhere like Alaska, where there's times where you just go days, weeks, even months without sunlight, just because that's where you're at in the world, then you should be supplementing with vitamin D. But if not, rely on that sunlight. That's the best source. And if you are going to be supplementing with it, maybe you work a graveyard shift, so you're just not able to get too much sunlight. The D3 is the best form. D2 is trash. Don't even waste your time with it. D3 is so much better, so that's the form to get.
Yeah, and this is like a free supplement, like Tom said. Always go for the sun if you can. I know just in today's world, spending 5 minutes out in the sun as like a relaxation is like just not heard of. No one does that, but take some personal self-care time. Even during your lunch, maybe head outside in some shorts and a t-shirt and soak up some sun.
Yeah, and you know what's even worse is like right now we're told to stay inside, shelter at home, don't go outside, don't spread the disease. Well, you're making it harder for yourself. You're weakening your immune system by not going outside and getting that sunlight. We evolve with the sun. The sun provides so many vital nutrients to us. Like, we need it. So, like, some of that shelter-in-place policy, man, just doesn't make any sense.
Shit, a lot of it doesn't make sense. Trust me.
Yeah. That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so what's the next one?
So this is going to be the last supplement that we recommend. I don't know how many people consider it a supplement. I know we both do. And that one's going to be salt. So if you're going to be buying a salt, we recommend Redmond's Real Salt. It's the best brand out there. Pretty much any salt that doesn't come from an ocean is going to be a good form of salt. If you're getting a salt from an ocean, I know we've said this a million times, you're going to get plastics with it. plastics, hormone disruptors. Hormone disruptors is going to create so many problems in your body. We can't even get into all of them, but it's going to create a lot of issues. So just don't even deal with it. Get yourself from Redmond's. It's the best brand out there. It tastes so much better. And if you are getting a higher quality salt, you're not just getting sodium. You're getting so many other minerals. So Redmond's Real Salt has over 60 minerals in it. So you're getting sodium, you're getting potassium, and you're getting magnesium. You're not getting a ton of magnesium, but like we mentioned earlier, like almost everybody's deficient in it. So you should be trying to get magnesium wherever you possibly can. And I know there's a lot of narrative around how salt is bad for you. It creates hypertension. That's not true. There's a lot of other factors that go into hypertension than salt. Salt is not the bad guy. It's actually the other white crystal sugar that's the bad guy with that. We have a whole podcast on that. And low salt is way more dangerous than high salt. So you should be getting about 3 to 6 grams per day. If it's summertime, like right now, if you're sweating, you're losing more salt. Or if you're extremely active, or if you're active during the summer, like you're going to need to be closer to 6 grams, maybe even over 6 grams. And high salt is not as dangerous as low salt. Low salt has a lot of issues. Low salt can lead to high insulin on its own. And we've talked about how high insulin creates so many different chronic diseases in the past. I mean, you can listen to damn near any of our podcasts to know just how damaging high insulin is. So even if you're not on a high-carb diet, low salt by itself can lead to high insulin. So don't be afraid of salt. Make sure you're getting enough of it per day.
Oh, yeah. No, you know, I'm like the salt king. Like, I love salt. And I'm glad, like, I, you know, educated myself, and now I understand the health benefits of salt. So, you know, I'm not afraid to take literally as much salt as I want every day. And actually, a listener of the podcast named Alex recently reached out and recommended another salt to us, this, like, 9X purple bamboo salt. And I looked into it. It's expensive as shit, but it looks like it has some properties to it. So I'll eventually check that out, and I'll report back if I like it or not.
Yeah, it did look really interesting. It was like bamboo salt, and it was like mixed with clay. So it looked like it had a really good mineral profile. I couldn't really get the specifics on it, so I couldn't really compare it to Redmond's to know like which one's better from a profile. But when I saw that price tag, I was like, oof. Too rich for my blood.
Oof, I know, me too, yeah.
It was like $75 bucks for like not even a full like salt shaker's worth.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, yeah, I can't do that. I hope it's good for that price tag.
It fucking better be. Yeah, I know. But yeah, so that's all the things we do recommend. So if you keep those high through your diet, if you can't, if you supplement with them, like we recommend a few of them, you should be good as you age. Like, genuinely, that'll take care of a lot of those processes that slow down. A lot of those hormones our body just simply doesn't produce anymore. It'll replenish all that stuff and have you feeling good for as long as you can.
Yeah, I mean, we pretty much tackled the two, like, biggest things that are going to kill you. Like, heart disease, we just covered that, gave you all the supplements you need for heart disease. And we didn't really cover it, but, like, when we were talking about mitochondrial health, if your mitochondria fail, that leads to things like cancer, which is the number two killer right behind heart disease. So if you cover, you get all that magnesium, you're taking care of your mitochondria, then you don't need that CoQ10 to help take care of that mitochondria. You don't really need to fear getting heart disease or cancer. And those are the two biggest killers in our society right now. So you get that stuff taken care of, you're good to go.
Yeah, so do you want to go over some of the things we don't recommend?
Yeah, so there's only two things that we really don't recommend that I know these are like super popular supplements. So the first one is going to be antioxidants. That's going to be any sort of antioxidants. You like vitamin C. You do need some vitamin C, but you don't need 1,000 milligrams, like 10,000 like milligrams a day. There's like no evidence at all that strong or lots of antioxidants improve your health at all. Actually, there's some evidence to make it look like the opposite. It's the opposite.
Yeah.
That high levels of antioxidants actually decrease your health span. We kind of covered that in our mitochondrial theory of aging podcast. I think that's probably about 10 podcasts ago, somewhere around there. So your body can make its own antioxidants. It's a demand-driven process, and that's the way you should let it be. Oxidation, we want to make it sound like it's always a bad thing, but it's not. Oxidation can be a good thing. If damaged cells become exposed, then they get destroyed, and then they get replaced. So as long as damaged cells get destroyed and then replaced, you're good. What what antioxidants can do is that it allows these damaged cells to just kind of barely hang on, and then they're allowed to replicate. What that is that that could be cancerous. So you don't want that to happen. You want damaged cells to die off and new ones to replace it. You don't want damaged cells to replicate. And that's what that's what antioxidants can do. They let the weak ones survive for too long. So oxidation can be a good thing.
Yeah, please go listen to the Mitochondrial Theory of Aging. That's literally what it's titled. Thinking about it now, I sure as shit should not have titled it that, because that is such an intimidating title. It should have just been like How to Stay Young or something. But yeah, please go back and listen to that, because it's a lot of information out there, and it's not very intuitive, and it's very backwards to what you've been told. And the whole, like, I don't know, speaking points about antioxidants are just BS. Those, like, fruit drinks you drink that are, like, $10 a shot are trash. Like, it literally just sugar drinks. You might as well drink a Pepsi. Like, all this stuff they're talking about is just, it's all full of, like, half-truths. And it's super frustrating to people like us.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a reason why vitamin C is found, like, with sugar, like in fruit, like in nature. And that's because you need all those, that extra vitamin C to deal with all the damage that's being caused from all the sugar that you're consuming with it. So it's not really providing you any good. It's just taking care of the damage that's coming along with it. So you're not, it's just like a net, like it's neutral. It's not a positive. It could be negative, but it's definitely not positive. It's neutral at best.
At best. Yep.
Yeah. So the next one is going to be blood sugar lowering drugs, things like berberine and metformin. So if you're a diabetic, these are some of the better drugs to be on for that effect. But there's also some evidence that shows that even healthy people can benefit from taking these. The main problem I have with taking like berberine or metformin to lower your blood sugar is that it kind of gives you like a little crutch. So it's like, okay, I can eat that soda, or I can drink that soda, I can eat my cake, and then I'm just going to take this drug to lower my blood sugar so I don't have to worry about that chronic high insulin and then getting, you know, diabetes or something like that, which I think is just a backwards way to do it. There's so much healthier ways to achieve the same thing, like that main goal of just lowering your blood sugar and keeping your insulin levels low. Things like a ketogenic diet, we've talked about that in probably like 80 of our podcasts, probably 90 of them,
yeah,
somewhere around there. Things like lowering stress, that'll also lower your blood sugar. Exercise is another great way. And probably the best way of all is going to be things like fasting. Fasting is going to be the best way to lower your blood sugar. So, like, there's a much healthier way to achieve the same thing that you don't need to be taking some drugs for. Like, yeah, there can be some benefits to taking them, but I just think, like, it's more likely going to lead to you just using that as a crutch and eating a lot of bad foods instead of actually taking care of the root cause.
Yeah, that's a great point. And like Tom said, there are some situations where taking these things are beneficial. And I know Mike, he was on our podcast a while back. He was a type 2 diabetic. His blood sugar at one point was like in the 600s. And he went on a low-carb diet, and now everything's fairly under control. But if you ask him, I don't know if I should put all his business out there. I'm going now. But his baseline blood sugar is on metformin. So you can see how that can kind of, I don't know what the word is, mask like the true, I don't know, degree of his disease, because he's taking a drug that really lowers his blood sugar. How bad would his blood sugar be without metformin? So it kind of goes back to these drugs are just treating the symptoms and not the root cause. So that's really why we don't recommend them.
Yeah, and it just kind of just allows you to eat more just shitty food that's going to be damaging your body in other ways instead of really like improving your health. Like we've talked about earlier, like we wish things like diabetes was painful so people knew right away, I need to change this. I need to improve my health right away instead of it being like a long, slow, painful death. Like if it was just, you know, as soon as you got high blood sugar, you knew about it, it hurt, then you'd just be like, I never want to experience that again. But unfortunately, that's not how it is. And these drugs just kind of mask the symptoms like Tyson said.
Yeah. So that's everything pretty much. That's all the supplements we recommend and the things we don't think you should take. So, I don't know. Do you have anything else to say? I feel like we covered a lot.
Yeah, I feel like we covered it all. I mean, just you take care of your heart, you take care of your mitochondria, and I mean, I don't know if you'll live forever, but you should live a long and healthy life.
For sure. So, okay, that's another podcast in the books. Thank you for listening. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, if you haven't already done so, please rate and subscribe on your favorite podcast provider. If you have already rated and subscribed, thank you very much. We greatly appreciate it. You can find us pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. That's going to be Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.